head into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place, and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
Yes, and welcome, my friends, for journeying down into the spoiler room for our first solo movie episode of 2019. I got a great movies lined up for you here, and tonight we've got one that's definitely going to spark a discussion with my crew. It is setting the Wayback Machine to 1987 to Zombie Nightmare, and tonight I've got a great crew joined with me back in the spoiler room. It is Scotty D, Baby Spice himself. Welcome back, Scott. You've been missed. So glad you could be here tonight.
Thank you very much. I thought you were going to say we've got a great year of great movies, and tonight we have this.
I was holding off on that, so we'll get into that, but so glad you could be here in the spoiler room again. And next to Scott, I waited to introduce her. It's the diva of the spoiler room, and she's the reason why we watched this.
I wanted a Tiga Carrara month. I didn't specifically ask for this.
But it had Adam West in it.
You just have Adam West in it, and he's always worth watching.
Yeah, there's really only so many places you can go with Tia Carrera.
And her adult lookalike. Anyway, which she did look a lot like her. Never mind. I don't know. I don't watch those things. Anyway, what's interesting about a little bit of backstory real quick, folks, is we all here, all three of us, watch a lot of movies. We watch a ton of movies, and occasionally, especially at my age, I tend to forget occasionally what movies I've watched, especially if they were kind of forgettable to me. As it turns out,
sometimes you repress them.
Yes. Last time when Dawn and I were talking about The Rope, she mentioned she wanted to do a Tia Carrera one. And I was like looking through Tia Carrera's library, and she mentioned Zombie Nightmare. And I looked and I'm like, holy crap, Adam West in this. We've got to see this. This should be awesome. And then I started the movie, and within 2 minutes, I was like, wait a minute. I've seen this. Oh, God. Oh, this is that movie. I actually watched it for the 31 Days of Horror, and I was like, oh, boy, I remember this one. We'll watch it.
And that's when you got off the phone and started browsing.
That's when I fired up my Yahtzee with friends and started rolling dice. Scotty D, would you like to give the synopsis of Zombie Nightmare?
No, but I will. Dawn. Next time we do Tia Carrera, we're going to do The Immortals. That one's actually really good, and no one's seen it. But this is a film that you may have noticed, found on its own, or you may in on the video store, or you may have found when it was lampooned on Mystery Science Theater 3000. Zombie Nightmare is a film, quote-unquote, starring Adam West and John Michael Thor, who is this the big king of muscle rock from Rock and Roll Nightmare and everything. And this is the film they did before Rock and Roll Nightmare. It's a film in which this guy is this young guy who's supposed to be, I guess, a teenager or something, but he's obviously about 30, and I think he was actually more than that even. He's a really sweet guy, but loves his metal and stuff. And one time after saving this guy, shopkeeper's life from a couple of armed robbers, he is assaulted on the street by the armed robbers. Oh, wait, no, they're completely different people than the armed robbers. I guess that scene was completely erroneous.
served no purpose.
Served no purpose at all. Just got, like, hit and run like he was that kid in Toxic Avenger on the street. And instead of taking him, you know, to the hospital or anything like that, they just kind of, some friends of the families just kind of drive the body up and place it on the lawn and wait for the voodoo priestess to be fetched. No one's calling any cops seeing this body on the lawn for hours. And the voodoo priestess gets brought over and says, "I can bring your son back because years ago, the father gave his life when the voodoo priestess was being defended by a couple of attackers." And so they bring the kid back as a zombie, who then goes and stalks all the people that were in the car in the hit and run and kills them. And then Adam West
with a porn stash
turns out to be an even better dude. And the end.
Oh, wow. Don, your initial thought with Zombie Nightmare.
I love the music.
Well, that's where all the budget went.
Yeah. So. Okay.
I was very excited. My very first thought with the opening credits there with the with Motorhead, I was like, yeah, Motorhead.
Yes.
I'm all about this. And then the movie started, and I'm like, I started entertaining myself by putting some of the characters together with D&D stats. So Tony, John Michael Thor, he got +2 pecs of power. He got a +3 cod piece of charisma because my God, could he have stuck a bigger cod piece in those sweatpants?
It's a cod piece. David Bowie even went, "Damn, that's big."
Yeah, no kidding, right? And the -3 hoodie of dexterity, because of course the only reason that he was so unobservant that he got hit by the car is because he had to put that hoodie up. There was a actually fairly extended scene of him adjusting that hoodie and going to stand in the road. and then Jimbo, the
bad guy, the main
God. I he wasn't even the main bad guy. He was just a cock.
Yeah.
He had -3 hair of asshatness. So yeah, I was having a lot of fun with putting D&D stats on these guys.
I think you could do this as a YouTube series. I'm not kidding.
I'm thinking we've got ourselves the start of a YouTube series.
That would be great.
Taking these old movies like this and giving characters D&D stats. I like. Oh yeah.
And then my other thought about it, you know, going back to being a little more serious, two things. Number one, I was kind of hoping Derek would be on this because he likes this shit, doesn't he?
He likes this shit, and he loves
John Michael Thor, and he loves John Fasciano.
He loves John Fasciano. John Fasciano did actually direct most of this movie, despite what the credits say. He got screwed out of all the credits, and he wrote the script.
Although, if I remember our discussion in 31 Days of Horror, this one was even a little rough for Derek to get through.
So I was really hoping he would have elected to be part of this because I wanted to be convinced to like this. I really did. I don't think there are certain things there are certain movies and styles of movies that you see and they're awful, truly awful, but you see them just at the right time in your life or when you're just in the right mood, like Toxic Avenger, like Sergeant Kabuki Man, like the pirate movie even. And they stick with you and they're stupid and they're awful movies, but you still love them. And this could have been that. but I'm so not in the right frame of mind, not the right time. You know, maybe if I saw it back in 87 when I was a kid, who knows? But yeah, that was kind of my first impression.
It's one that, yeah, it's, yeah. Scotty D, your initial thought with this film.
You wanted to like it. I own the Blu-ray.
There you go. Well, it's got every, I mean, it's got all the elements. It's got a great title. Look at this cast.
The poster's amazing.
The poster is amazing. So how could you, you know, you're like, this has got to be a win.
It's got to be a win, but it's not, you know, and I thought that this is my first time seeing it outside of Mystery Science Theater 3000. A lot of times there are movies that they would do I had happened to see beforehand, sure. Because those are just the kind of things I go for. But in this case, I was just I got to it late, so I knew the movie. But I was like, okay, let's watch this. Blu-ray high definition doesn't really add a lot, because you know the. You know what adds a lot to the high definition is if you actually invest in lights. yeah, you know, this movie should have been an easy slam dunk. This should have been at least a good, fun movie, which is all I think it was supposed to be. And there are some parts of this movie that I really do like. There's some parts where I kind of giggle and stuff at it. I actually kind of tip my hat to Mr. Adam West for playing a real villainous role. You know, we're not used to seeing that. You know, he's usually either a supporting character or he's known as the ultimate hero. And he wasn't winking or doing anything to the camera. He was reading from a script that was
on his desk,
which was of course supposed to be edited out. That was there was a huge problem with the editing, which I'll talk about later.
Okay,
but that was not on purpose. He had the lines memorized, but something had happened where he had to read them from the desk. But I mean, he was not winking. He wasn't playing to any previous performances. He was just doing it. There was the scummy people. And I think the plot just had like a really great hook. But you get to the actual like chase scenes, they're not really thrilling, they're not cathartic. You think, okay, well then they're gonna be kind of gory or something like that. You're gonna have some like good like Friday the 13th goofy gores or something like that, Friday the 13th or trauma. And it's not that either, you know, it's mostly off screen. There's a few things that I like here and there, but it's just not a very enjoyable movie. And it had everything going for it. I blame the credited director, Jim Braverman, for a lot of it.
Yeah.
I blame the editing for a lot of it.
Oh, and editing is atrocious.
The editing. I'll talk about the editing now, if you don't mind. Okay.
No, go ahead.
The problem with the editing is that, okay. And I'll try to make this a long story short. They thought they were filming it in the United States. Then they said, no, we can save money, so we're going to film it in Canada. Okay. And then John Fasano had to fire everybody that was supposed to work on it because they said you can only take a few people along.
Oh, jeez.
And he was really upset about that. This is his first real big movie. He gets up there, and Jim Braverman is there and says, we are going to co-direct this movie. And he says, okay, we'll co-direct it. Ha, ha, ha. He got screwed out of the directing credit because you can only have one director credited. Also, if the director isn't the part of the Canada tax shelter deal was if either the writer or the director is an American, the other has to be Canadian. So even though he wrote the script too, he was screwed out of that credit too. So he actually directed basically every scene that Adam West was not in, but he wrote the script, but he got no credit. He was credited as assistant director.
Wow.
And then he says, well, let me come up here and I'll edit it with you. No, no. And the director was like, no, 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 I'll take care of it. He says, no, 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 I'll do it. He says, no, 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 I'll take care of it. And insisted and basically sent him back south. 1 month later, they've been editing this movie all along. And he gets a casual call. By the way, can we have a script? We've been editing without a script.
Oh, my God.
And he like will point out to things and says like, yes, what happened was Adam West, because they had shot, they had made it an entirely new scene where they could have other locations for Adam West besides that office.
Yeah.
They had like kept Adam West and everything up and everything. So he had, Adam West had had to take a bunch of no-dos in order to stay awake to, so he'd be ready for the next day's filming. Cause they only have the big stars for the next few days. Right.
Oh my God.
A few days. And because he was so exhausted, he was on no-dos and everything. He had remembered the lines, but he was just having hard, he was, you know, feeling murky.
Yeah.
So he had the thing on the script that he could refer to saying, and this will all get cut out, right? Yes, this will all get cut out, of course. No, it has him like reading right from the script in there. It's supposed to be cut out in the editing. Wow. Was not. Other like good shots and stuff that they had were completely cut out. It's like, oh man. So the editing was atrocious. That was the editing thing. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's very interesting.
It's just a bad movie, folks. But it's kind of funny because so many of the people in it went on to become pretty darn big, which is funny.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is...
Tia Carrere is not even the biggest name in this movie.
No, she isn't. But this was her first film. And Dawn, for her first film, she doesn't get a huge amount of screen time. But since you were looking forward to Tia Carrere films, what'd you think of Tia Carrere's character in here?
It was awful.
Yeah.
That there's no other word for it. It was awful. Yeah.
Well, let's face it. Now we are talking a low budget horror film in the late 80s, but all the female characters were.
I don't know if it was John Fasano's script or if it was alterations, rewrites, whatever. But holy crap, there was a whole lot of "Don't worry, your sweet pretty little head. The men will take care of things."
Mm-hmm. Well, every woman in this movie is almost defined by their relationship with a man. I mean, this thing fails the Bechdel test like within milliseconds. It's just ridiculous.
It does. I mean, because every girl on here is just the hanger-on to the guy. They follow pretty much what he says. They're talked down to. I mean, our villain, who really isn't the villain kid, is the scummiest kid in the world. He continually hits on this very much older waitress, and I don't know if they were trying to go for a joke, and maybe it is what we were talking about before the show, the culture that it is today, but Dawn, that was damn creepy, wasn't it?
It really was. And now that you're talking about it, if we forward a little bit to where the cops are talking to her, I'm almost wondering, and maybe I'm giving Fasano too much credit here.
Probably.
Maybe he was actually spoofing, because it was really awful. Oh, you were asking for it. It was your boyfriend. You know, yeah, you just went in this alley with him and then you changed your mind. Why did you do this to your boyfriend? Dude, I was in the process of being raped. There's a knife over there. I wasn't here by choice. No, it's your boyfriend. We know that. And the way it was done, I would love to believe that it was a commentary on how awful women are treated, but I really kind of suspect that it's not.
What about you, Scotty D? The treatment of the women characters, and especially that particular interview scene after she is attempted raped by faux evil Ed,
Jimbo.
Sadly, that's the probably unintentionally so, that is probably the most realistic depiction in the movie, is that because women unfortunately are treated like that. No, it was just the women are basically defined by their men. Tia Carrere got off a little easier than most. Yeah. She had a you could see some shreds of a character. She was a latchkey kid, you know, never saw her parents, that kind of thing. But there really wasn't much there. The director, I just found this out like 2 seconds ago because I have the IMDb up so I don't like screw up anybody's name or credit. I guess the director said, like, what the hell else did that guy do? Porn. Lots of it. So yeah, I'm like, oh, that, yeah, that explains a lot. Okay, about the acting. the Jimbo, we should talk about Jimbo. Was the biggest name in this movie, you know?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah,
because Jimbo, and this is very cathartic for somebody who has really not liked his movies. Jimbo is Sean Levy, who went on to be a really well-celebrated director and I'm sure he looks back on this and kind of just shakes his head. He did things like, you know, Big Fat Liar, Just Married, then he did like the Pink Panther, the Night at the Museum movies, Date Night. Now, to be fair, he's done a couple movies I've really liked. So, I mean, I'm not completely anti Sean Levy. I haven't seen the third one, but I liked the second Night at the Museum movie.
Third one's pretty good too.
And I liked Real Steel.
Oh, I love Real Steel. That is such an underrated film.
He did Real Steel, and I'm like, wow, that's a real good movie, Sean. And I don't think he hasn't done.
He directed 6 episodes of Stranger Things.
Yeah, he's doing mostly that. He's helping out with Stranger Things now. And he's capable of being a good director and everything like that. He just happened to not make a lot of good ones, especially early on. But honestly, he is one of my more favorite characters because of the shutdowns, honestly, before the rape scene, of course.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously, and this is probably the most true moment of the movie, and this is the thing that I would like to see, is that he would be this punk kid. He's obviously supposed to be like 17 years old, and he's this like awful, snotty little bastard. And he gets all this like, you know, thrill of like, yeah, I'm the baddest guy in the world. And then he like will hit on this woman who'll shut him down, and he'll have to like make some like really snide sexist comment. But it's really just obvious that he just got totally demasculated, you know?
Yeah.
In front of everybody. And my favorite line is still, hey, you will take it and you will like it. And what are you looking at? Eat your ice cream. Yeah. That's my favorite line in the movie. I actually like that scene, I have to admit.
He does play it up, actually. And he is, you know, exactly what you want him to be. So scummy. And yeah, it is hilarious that this is the guy who is driving the car that runs over, you know, we'll just call him Thor.
I don't know how you can say he can come out of nowhere. Look at any picture of Thor, and I like Thor. I follow him on Facebook. His music is just amazingly like cool, goofy rock, you know. but you cannot just miss Thor. He's like he's like a skyscraper of meat.
Well, yeah, you know, you're right. You know, Jimbo, he plays it off. Oh, I actually kind of liked it. And he's the one that, you know, hit Thor, AKA Tony, in this, you know, and he plays it up the way you want. But yeah, you're right. I loved how no one took him seriously. Even his mom, he's like trying to be all badass in his home, drinking milk from the carton, and just grabs a wad of meat from the fridge and chews on it. And she's just like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, he throws it at her and throws a tantrum and like storms off. It's just like, great. I'm like, no one takes this guy seriously, like ever, you know? And he gets most of the kills in here are quick, which is a bit disappointing. And not really,
really
too creative, not really creative, which you would hope, because folks, let's face it, when you watch films like this and the setup and everything, you're like, oh, cool, we're going to get like some outrageously weird death scenes. And no, we get lame death scenes for one. And his is the only somewhat creative in that he gets a steel bat through the gut. But what I thought,
Even that's not handled well. Yeah, if you saw this at MST3K and thought like I did, oh, they cut stuff out. When I see this uncut, is there's going to be some inserts? No, there's not.
There's no inserts. But what I found interesting about the film, and this is, tells you how interesting this film was because I was paying attention to the time. The first three times that Zombie Tony shows up, the first three times anything actually happens is 17 minutes almost exactly apart. I kid you not.
Interesting.
I kid you not. The interaction where Tony gets hit, and now I'm not talking about the attack in the beginning where the one Tony's dad saves the voodoo priestess from the two redneck guys, but you know, from the beginning of the film to when Tony gets hit is actually at the 17 minute mark. At the 35 minute mark is when he goes after his first victims. He shows up again at the 51. I'm paying attention going,
Wow.
I'm going, you've got to be kidding me, because I noticed the first time, because I paid attention, because as we've mentioned, there's not a lot that happens in between much of this. There's a lot of dialogue and a few funny scenes, but you're just like, okay. But I looked at it and I'm like, the first three things that happen are 17 minutes apart. And then when we get to the third act, I'm like, let it be 17 minutes. And it wasn't, it was 15. And I'm like, damn it. That was
noticed different things when the zombie Tony came back, but that's really neat, that timing.
Yeah, it's 17 minutes apart. Now, give or take a few seconds, I'm sure the internet will hold me to, but literally from his appearances, it was like 17 minutes apart, and I'm just like, wow. And that goes along, I think, with what you were saying, Scott, with the editing, how atrocious it is. It makes me wonder if someone was like, it makes me wonder if they're like, oh, we haven't seen Zombie Tony in a while, who apparently wasn't even played by John Michael Ford.
No, it's a different actor. There's some scenes where it isn't. It's played by a guy, and I never got, because I couldn't hear the commentary, but I was able to catch a couple of the special feature segments, which is what I watch and stuff, and then I come on the show, regurgitate what they said, and you all think I'm smart. My secret revealed. But they mentioned that it was an actor that they fired whose name was Pee-wee.
Piemont, yeah.
Piemont, was it? Because they kept calling him Pee-wee.
Pee-wee Piemont, who has done a shit ton of stunt work.
He got fired midway through. Because I thought it for sure it was something where Thor was a big name, and he just decided halfway through, he's like, wait, I'm not doing this whole movie. I have to go on tour or something like that, you know? But I thought it was something like that. But no, apparently they didn't like the performance of the zombie, and then they fired Pee-wee.
We should add that he is Emmy award-winning actor.
Yeah, he might have been. Yeah, he might have been great. Like I said, this director is shit. Not Fasano. I'm not saying. I'm saying it was the other guy, and it was Braverman who said he fired him too.
Yeah, he won an Emmy Awards for stunt coordination in the series Southland.
God, another big name. Look at that. Zombie nightmare is just racking up awards.
But Don, what'd you think of our zombie Tony? I mean, at least it's a voodoo zombie, right?
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, so the first time zombie Tony gets up, I noticed right away that there was no codpiece.
No.
That was gone. Then the second time zombie Tony came up, he had short hair. But still no codpiece. And the third time, it was short hair and a codpiece. But I'm like, wow, so zombies' hair actually gets shorter instead of the other way around.
hadn't thought about it that way.
Something else gets larger.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have you be the one to say it. So.
And that's the way. But that's how I read. That's when I went looking for, okay, this is no longer John Michael Thor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that whole zombie rising scene too. Scott, I'm glad you mentioned the editing because it comes back to that. We keep coming back to that, but we get the zombie scene with the voodoo priestess who raises zombie Tony and then raises him again.
Right. Well, you mean the pre-credit sequence?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I guess it would be pre-credit sequence. It goes that far into the movie, but yeah, where she raises him, the coffin opens and he raises up. And then she opens the coffin again and he raises up again, but he never left. I'm like, what? How'd you feel about zombie Tony, Scott?
You know, everybody knows that zombies have two major things that are that will harm them. One is somehow having, you know, being shot in the head or having the, you know, head separated from the body. And two are these disruptions in the space-time continuum. And in this case, that like they decided to go all like esoteric and shit and say like, no, it's the space-time continuum, you know. You're playing with a total anarchist behind the camera here, you know. You don't know what's going to happen. We could all end this movie and we're still at the baseball game from the first scene. We don't know. You know, the rules don't exist anymore. Where you'll be just be worried about what's happened to your world and it's just going to blow your pretty little minds.
You just teleported everywhere.
Yeah, he teleported everywhere. You know, also, you know, I don't know if he either teleported or he had people aiding him, because if you notice, he is like severely when he's chasing this one blonde girl is one of his victims.
Oh my God. That chase through the
I think it was like one of his first thing. Yeah. He's a blonde victim. He had just killed the boyfriend and we got to see him in his, wet swim trunks and stuff, which I'm sure will make some people happy, but
Mr. Velcro shorts.
But yeah, I think I'm not even talking about your preference. I'm just talking about that your standards would probably be pretty low. Really happy. But he's chasing this young woman through the thing, and he is obviously hanging way back. She is obviously getting away. No problem. Has no problem getting away until the camera abruptly cuts to her just standing behind a wall instead of running like she was doing. And then the guy comes up, roar! I mean, like, of course he's going to catch you, you know, if you're just standing there. Like, this is not an impenetrable fortress. It's a high school after close.
The door was right. Yeah, she, not only that, but then he grabs her, throws her on the bench.
She did. That's the scene that where she ran right and turned away from the door that clearly said exit.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
She did. There's an exit door right there. And she actually slows down at some point in the running because she's waiting for the zombie.
This is like a zombie, kind of have to die here, have things to do.
Well, and then he grabs her and throws her on the bleacher and he goes for the head, but somehow she's holding her gut and there's blood. I'm like sitting here going,
oh God, the editing. And I thought for sure we were going to get like an insert shot. Not that this is what I was looking for the movie, but at this point you're looking for any cheap thrills where you can. And that's what this movie should be. It should be cheap thrills. And I thought for sure we were going to get like a close up shot of like the head exploding and like the eyeball coming out of the screen or something like that. Nope. Nothing. It's like he goes roar. You hear the bat come down and then the screaming stops. And then you see blood all over her stomach where she's clutched her gut.
Yeah.
And incidentally, that's not enough to kill somebody either. So it's like, it's one shot. It's like,
yeah.
Look, this is a bad movie. I mean, there's going to be, I'll want to revisit it because it's so bad, but I mean, mm-hmm. that's it.
Well, what's odd is even though it's bad and it's not handled too well, the first, I'd say 15 minutes of this film actually have you at least a little bit interested. You get the scene from the baseball, the dad being, you know, the hero saving the, who we find out later is the voodoo priestess, you know, the kid there, we finally make a connection, you know, Thor is saving the people, you know, the liquor store. And you're like, okay, this is at least interest. Something's happening, you know, and it kind of pulls you. And then after that, you're like, you're checking your watch going,
Adam West really is good in this, though. I will say
he doesn't show up until 45 minutes, but yeah, you're right. Adam West makes the most of this. He's not acting. There's no Batman reference.
I think he's very, I mean, I don't think the methods are believable at all. The script is not believable at all, but I think the way he presents himself as this very corrupt cop with a shady past, I think is completely plausible and everything. And I think he does a decent job when he's like, just sits there, like, get in the car, witch. And he's got, you know, and he's got everybody at gunpoint and everything. I'm like, yeah, he's genuinely threatening at the point. How threatening is he? He's got the zombie right there and he knows he's not going to hurt him. He's like, don't worry. He's not going to bite you.
He is acting in a different film than everybody else because he is putting his all into this.
West is good in the movie, I will say.
West is making the most of this role, and this is a character you wish you'd see in a higher budget, say, crime drama, because he is acting like, you know, not what you would expect from a film like this. And yeah, he is good in this. Don, what'd you think of Mr. Adam West's performance? Even though he doesn't show up till halfway through the movie.
Oh, I liked it. I actually said this. I said, look at how young he looks and not Batman-like at all. Not Batman-like at all because of that porn stash.
The stash was a bit distracting, but
I liked the mustache. I thought that was kind of like, that's very threatening. You look like that.
He kind of has that
Harry Reams meets Larry Zonka thing going on. Yeah, he's doing it.
There's other moments in this film. It is, on the whole, you're right, a completely not good film. But there are moments, like, there's also a scene, because after we get Adam West show up, he's got a partner who's the young partner who's still investigating, who thinks something else is fishy. And Adam West's veteran corrupt cop is just like, yeah, let's just finish this up. So they grab some rando off the street who's the killer, and they actually have a rather impressive tussle scene in the police officer's office, mm-hmm. which I'm watching this going, wow, that's actually a rather believable fight going on.
Oh yeah.
I mean, maybe it's because they had the stunt coordinator there, you know, before he got fired, but you know, you get moments like that. But yeah, Adam West, especially in that final bit where he's confronting it, and you find out he's one of the guys that attacked the now voodoo priestess, we find out. You know, he is a shining moment in this film because he is acting a hell of a lot better than this film deserves. By any right. Yep. Yeah, and the finale too, which it actually has kind of that cool ending where he's sitting there and he takes out the voodoo priestess, who is the only somewhat strong female character out of the whole female group of characters. She's probably the strongest. And she does the spell just before she dies. And Adam West, he gets pulled into a grave, and a grave is glowing. I mean, like, I kind of liked how this movie ended.
That was awesome. I will say that was hot.
That was a pretty impressive effect. I mean, for a movie like this, you don't really expect that, do you, Scott? Something kind of like that? Because that's actually kind of an elaborate setup if you think of how they had to do that for a film like this.
No, that was really good. I really liked that scene. It was kind of that it kind of brought that old EC Comics kind of morality tale kind of thing to it, which is, you know, when you're looking and you're seeing this tale of a zombie killing people with a baseball bat, you think it's a slasher. When you realize it goes back even further to this awful crime that was committed even further back.
Yeah.
And some people are actually getting literally dragged down into the pits of hell and everything like that. You're like, no, this is like some really heavy morality play, EC Comics, Tales from the Crypts type stuff. And that felt really good. That was like some real good traditional horror, and I was impressed with that, I will say.
Yeah, I mean, it does end with that. Don, what'd you think of that final ending with him getting pulled down in that? I mean, that's actually kind of a high point in the film.
I thought that part was really great, really inventive, and a really strong ending. What happened after that? Less so, but yeah, that was really good.
Lest we give it too much credit.
Just when you thought it was going to end good, Don, how does it end?
How does it end after Adam West is defeated by the zombie being raised of the man he killed? Our hero, our zombie, Tony's dead father.
Yeah.
The police officer, the actual hero of the piece, watches all this happen and then leaves the corpse of the zombie laying in one side, and the dead Molly Macumbo, our zombie queen, lying on another grave, and just walks out of the graveyard as if nothing's wrong.
Does it call for people to come by or backup or whatever?
Would no, just... nothing. There's just a bunch of corpses here. It's a graveyard. We'll leave them here. Somebody will come along and take care of them later.
They'll get buried somehow.
Yeah. You know, one of them's a zombie and rotten already. The other one's a fresh one.
Grave digger will come by and go, "Oh, I must have forgot one. Damn it."
But Molly Macumbo, what a great, you know, that would be a great name. I'd be so happy about that name if this was not the only black character in the movie.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that was like the only thing. It's like, God, that's just... Yeah, it was not feeling good. I was not feeling good about that. I was like, come on, just one other person, please. Make it the cop. Make it one of the kids. I don't care who you make it. Just make it somebody else. But no, it's just all these all these people saying, like, we're shooting a horror movie, eh? And then one black character, and of course she's called that crazy Haitian.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh. But that's because otherwise it would be a good name. But
yeah.
But it doesn't play like a good name when she doesn't have company. You know what I mean? Like it becomes more of an agenda, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, I was impressed that Tia Carrara's name was Amy.
That's true. It wasn't an Asian name.
Well, you know what? That's interesting. Actually, you know what? It's funny. I should say this here. Mm-hmm. Funny. You should say this here, because the original script, something else from the special features, the original script, and so I guess we can't really say what I was saying before, because the original script, it was supposed to be a blaxploitation film.
Oh, was it really?
And they had all these different names, and they had all these crazy names, and the only name that didn't get changed was Molly Macumbo.
Oh wow!
Oh wow!
Because they said, because she they were told by producers, nobody outside the United States is going to want to see a movie with black people in it.
Oh, Dude, this could have, if they would have did it that angle.
And so that's why it's like everybody's like named like Chad and Todd and
Jim and Amy.
Chad and Muffy.
I mean, I know Tia Carrera is from Honolulu, but you would have imagined they would have given her an Asian name just because the way Molly Macumbo was named. It's just like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could totally see it. What I found interesting, did anyone else notice this? And maybe it's because it's the old guy in me who notices these things and don't make judgments of me. But how when she ran, she was running from Zombie Tony in the garage, and she kept adjusting her crop top so she wouldn't fall out. It was like, oh, I'm running scared for my life. Oh, wait, I got to adjust.
I must adjust my bus.
I just found it funny because this is her first film, and I understand, you know, I can completely understand as an actress, but as a character who's supposedly running for her life.
Yeah, you know, part of the exploitation fan is saying, let it slip. And then part of you as a decent human being, sometimes the two are at odds, says, at a girl, you if it's not in your contract, you absolutely don't show off.
I just found it funny because of the situation. You know, I didn't personally want that to happen. I'm just like, she's running for her life, and you can tell she kind of pauses for a moment to make sure everything. I'm just like, well, you know, which she actually dies. She makes the most of her death too. I thought they played that well, actually.
But she's a good actress. Or at least a better actress than most of the cast, I will say.
She's a better actress than most of the cast, and the sound effects and everything, when they handled her, I was just like, oh, damn. I mean, she's into it. She slides down that window, you know. I mean, completely. I'm like, God, that couldn't have been comfortable to do when she gets smashed against the car paint door. But, yeah, I mean, I there's moments, but I think... Don, is there anything that we haven't talked about this film that you maybe wanted to bring up from your notes or anything?
Just one little detail, and it's just for you. So in the scene, the first kill scene, when the old janitor is in his room and he is dozing off as the two teenage... The Fangoria magazine.
Yes. I'm glad you brought it up because I made a note of it. I'm like, there is a high point in this film. There's a Maximum Overdrive featured on the cover of the Fangoria magazine that the janitor is reading. There's Scott. There's your other minority character.
That's true. There's one other character, the guy who wasn't doing his job.
Right. But he was reading a Fangoria, and
it was not John Fasano's fault, because as I said, this was supposed to be a black exploitation.
Well, yeah. Which I honestly, I want to see that movie now.
That would have been a much better movie.
But yes, he has a Fangoria with the Maximum Overdrive featured on the cover, and that made me squee a little. I'm sure it made Scott roll his eyes and go, dear God, I can't escape that piece of shit. But for I finally have
a horror movie cover, and it's not even for a good movie. I know. I just got half the listeners, all two of you, against me there. Like, that's right. Maximum Overdrive. That movie's shit too.
There you go. There you go.
That movie, that is Cocaine the movie. It says directed by Stephen King. Might as well say directed by Cocaine. By AC/DC and Cocaine.
they kind of go together back then. But no. See, folks, I don't just have people on my show that agree with me. So there you go. We're at odds quite a bit usually, actually. But yes, I'm glad you pointed that out, Dawn, because I actually put that in my notes, because there wasn't a lot else to focus on. Positively. So, Scott, was there anything at all we didn't touch on yet that maybe you wanted to bring up, or are we good?
I really don't want to touch anything.
He doesn't want to touch anything about this movie anymore.
I think I've touched enough.
Well, that's what you've been doing during the movie anyway.
I had to entertain myself somehow.
That's right. Tumblr doesn't have porn anymore, so what are you going to do?
Just had to... you know, get in there and find the person within the movie with the largest breasts, which of course is John Michael Thor.
John Michael Thor. And on that note, I think we will wrap it up for the evening. So folks, if you haven't gathered Zombie Nightmare, if you happen to run across it and you have some things to help you through the night, like a strong beverage, you may want to check it out for the cast, but just prepare yourself accordingly, because this movie has all the elements of what it should be. Just this really great cheesy cult film ends up being a film with these people in it and some moments, but not really enough to justify it. And I've actually watched it twice now, so I'm glad we're doing this episode, because it'll remind me in a year when I'm flipping through channels, go, oh, Zombie Nightmare, that's got Tia Carrere in it. Then...
I know. It's awful. It's like the combination of seeing so many movies and our natural, like, early Alzheimer's kicking in.
It's like, oh, I'll watch this. And then, yeah, I'll end up going, oh, I've seen this. Yeah. So... Well, I appreciate my panel joining us tonight and muddling through this film. And this is now where I give my fantastic crew the license to shill. So, Don, go ahead. Where can they find your written stuff at?
On occasion, you can find me in theaudience.net.
Awesome. Fantastic. Great stuff there, where she reviews good movies and not so good movies as well. So, but you'll definitely find some there that'll make you want to go, huh, I should check that out. So great written word stuff there. And Scotty D, I know it's been a while, but it's still the internet. And once you put it out there, it's always out there. Tell folks where they can still find your material at.
The ancient historical relics, the ancient tomes known as the Movieocracy articles, are out there still. I've been having some issues lately. You know, first it was psychological, then it was practical, now it's physical. That have kept me from writing for a while, but you can catch them all at movieocracy.com. You can also catch my web series out there at vimeo.com/channels/movieocracy.
Fantastic. Some great stuff there. Scotty D.
Thank you.
Really, I enjoy your stuff. And Don, I enjoy your stuff. And not just because we're friends and you're on my show a lot, but it's true stuff that I look at and go, what movie is that? What? you know, and it makes me want to check it out, whether or not you enjoyed it or not. You read these articles, and yeah, folks, you're going to go to both these fine folks' stuff, and you'll find stuff you haven't heard of, but you wish you had. So thank you both for joining us. We've got another interesting episode next week. I did it last year with pronouns, where I had the thing and it. I mean, names and kind of generic names and that. And this year I did it where I tried to link the titles. So we have Zombie Nightmare. So next week will be Nightmare City. And then after that will be City Limits. So there you go.
You know, I got to tell you something. I spent the day going out today cat shopping with my friend. And he's a big horror movie fan.
Yeah.
He's a really good guy. And my friend James. And I was telling him, I'm like, yeah, I got to be on a podcast tonight. And he said, he says, what's it on? I said, it's on movie Zombie Nightmare. And he says, oh, that's the one Umberto Lenzi with the plane and everything. I says, no, that's Nightmare City. They're doing that next week. I swear to God. Nice. That was the exchange we had. So
nice. So I don't know if I would do it every January, but it's fun to do. It's something I wanted to do for a while, just kind of find a batch of movies where I could try to link the titles.
It's fun.
You know, and it's kind of fun, and it's interesting what you can connect up. So check that out next episode, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Now I think we'll just say good night, everyone.
Good night, good night, everyone.
Ace of Spades! Ace of Spades! Yeah, check out the soundtrack to this movie.
There my dog's go. Favorite band.
Yeah.
Hey, all my friends out there looking for more Spoiler Room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive Spoiler Room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on to Twitter at Special Mark Pro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the Spoiler Room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.